He stood, the wind whipping over him, his mind going over the events of the past few hours.
I don't believe this.
Across the stream, the moonlight silhouetted a cluster of horse-like shapes. Each snout terminated in a single pointed spike-shaped tooth. Long, cat-like tails lashed as they sniffed the air. One bent to lap the water. The rest jogged forward, pausing and sniffing the water's surface before splashing across.
Oh, God.
The two closest lowered their long necks and put on speed. Britton turned and ran. He risked a look over his shoulder. They were on his heels, neck straining, wind coursing through tufts of spotted hair. The single spike tooth on each snout jutted toward his back. He felt the magical tide surge with his mounting terror. The tree line remained far away. He'd never make it. Hot breath gusted against his neck. His magical tide answered, exploding and rippling out from him through the interlocking streams all around, opening a gate a few yards to his left. He pivoted sharply, running for it. He felt one of the spike teeth slice through the air behind him. The change in direction bought him a few moments. He closed the distance and leapt through a gate for the second time that night.
Magical School Reference Wallet Card, publication of the Supernatural Operations Corps. Legal Schools: Pyromancy, Fire Magic. Hydromancy, Water Magic. Terramancy, Earth Magic. Aeromancy, Air Magic. Physiomancy, Body Magic. Prohibited Schools: Negromancy, Black Magic, Witching. Necromancy, Death Magic. Portomancy, Gate Magic. Sentient Elemental Conjuration. Prohibited practices. Please see applicable Geneva Convention amendments. Terramantic Animal Control, Whispering. Offensive Physiomancy, Rending.
Britton jogged to a stop. He recognized Route 7, snaking south between the base and his parents' home in Shelburne, a few miles down the rural Vermont road. The sky was still dark, the road empty. He ran off the road to crouch in the bushes. Sharp branches tore at his flight suit, and the early frost blasted his feet. The gate shimmered a few feet off the road. The demon horses sniffed tentatively from the other side, moving toward it, darting away. A moment later, the portal snapped shut. It reappeared to his left, bathing the bushes in flickering light, then vanished again.
It's responding to my fear. I have to calm myself. Focus on what you can control. You're injured and cold. You might make it through the night, but you'll be caught in the daylight. You need shoes, and you need cover. They're on the lookout for a soldier, so you need to get out of this uniform. Go.
He followed the road toward his parents' home. If he made good enough time, he could use the spare key and grab clothing before they woke. The flight suit kept him relatively warm, but after 20 minutes, he could no longer feel his hands or feet. It was a mixed blessing. His numb feet let him move faster, no longer reporting the pain of stepping on twigs and roots. The numbness and rhythm of his movement freed his mind to reflect on how, in just a few hours, magic had taken him from army officer to fugitive.
Stop it. If you think about this crap, it'll slow you down. If you slow down, they'll catch you. If they catch you, you know what they'll do. You're running, so run, damn you. Run!
Orange streaked the sky, and he could feel the rising sun on his back. Route 7 gave out onto an unpaved rural route, and minutes later he stood exhausted in the driveway of his family home. As the numbness abated in the warming air, his feet reminded him of hours running across frozen grass and rocks. He looked up at the cracking paint and patched screen of the house and felt the tides of magic ebb, lulled by the familiar surroundings.
Familiar, but never a real home.
The reason for that crouched before the steps leading to the wraparound porch. Britton felt his pulse quicken, and the tide of magic surged anew. It couldn't have been later than 6, but his father was awake and gardening, despite the early fall frost. Stanley Britton's pastel clothing flapped off his skinny body. Cheatham had once told him that there were two kinds of Marines, big and mean, or skinny and mean. Old age had cemented his father in the skinny and mean variety. The retired colonel had a blade of a nose, sunken eyes, and a hard jaw, clenched to show that he still considered himself on duty. A small gold cross gleamed from his neck, refracting the growing sunlight. Stanley moved away from the steps, attacking a line of withered dandelions. He brandished a spade like a weapon, knifing into the cold ground. Britton crept up the porch behind him.
Jesus withers the fig tree and leaves me with all these damn weeds. Holy Christ, give me the strength to put up with this crap.
Britton slipped inside and went to his old room. His father had converted it to storage the day Britton shipped out. The floor was heaped with cardboard boxes. A yellowing army promotional poster depicting an Apache attack helicopter was the only hint that Britton had ever lived here. He rummaged through a box at the base of his mother's wardrobe, packed with clothing intended for Goodwill that she'd never gotten around to giving up. He shrugged out of his flight suit and into a pair of jeans and paint-stained t-shirt. It was inadequate to the cold outside, but it was clean. More importantly, he was out of uniform and would attract no more attention than any black man in Vermont. He kicked the flight suit behind a pile of boxes and grabbed a pair of his father's shoes and old wool socks. The shoes were a half size too large and without tread, but he was grateful to have something covering his ragged feet. He returned to the stairs, stumbling in the oversized shoes. Desda appeared in the hallway below and froze. He recognized her apron from his youngest days, a washed-out heart with the words, "Kiss the cook," in letters so faded that he read them from memory. Her gray hair was pinned into an untidy bun, her body still strong and thin despite her years. Britton composed himself and descended the stairs.
Oscar! Why didn't you tell us you were coming?
He crushed her to him.
Oh!
I love you, Mom.
I know, sweetie. I love you, too. Oscar, I can't breathe.
No time for goodbyes. Every second you stay here brings you closer to getting caught. Run, you damn fool.
But he didn't. He held his mother, even when Stanley entered the house. He kept his eyes closed, but felt his father's disapproving presence and the rage boiling in response.
What's going on, Oscar? You get yourself into some kind of trouble?
Stop it, Stanley.
What are you doing here?
Dad, can't I just come home? Can't a son visit his family?
That's crap! You never come home unless you want something.
No, Dad, that's crap. I never come home because it's like walking into a freezer.
Come on, you two. Oscar's home for 5 minutes and...
You had a standing invitation. I invite you to First Baptist every Sunday and...
Oh, that's a great idea. I can sit next to you while you pretend to be a Christian.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Where in the Bible does it tell you to hit your wife? Where does it tell you to hit your son?
Oscar, please!
But the magical tide didn't care. It surged with Britton's fury and sadness. He pushed against it, but it was useless. The air in the kitchen archway shimmered, folded in on itself, and resolved into the static light of an open gate. Stanley's eyes shot wide, but Desda continued to look at her son.
I'm sorry, Mom.
Sweet Jesus!
What's wrong?
Desda turned. She froze as she saw the gate.
Oh my God! You're one of those damn selfers! This is unfriggin' believable!
My God! Oscar, are you doing that?
I'm sorry, Mom. I love you.
I don't understand. This isn't right. I'm your mother. Oscar, I would have known!
Oh, for Christ's sake, Des! Get the hell away from him!
The demon horses were not far away.
No. No, this isn't right. Not right.
It's just a thing, like acne or chicken pox. I don't have a choice. It's gonna be okay.
The gate flickered and snapped shut.
Get your damn hands off her! Get...
Stanley leapt forward and grabbed Oscar's arms, shouldering Desda out of the way and knocking her to the floor. Oscar ignored his father, reaching for his mother. Stanley snarled, pounding against his son's massive chest.
No! No! No!
Stop, Dad. This is stupid.
Shut up! Get out of here! Leave us alone!
Oscar tried to move to the door, but Stanley blocked his way, raining down punches on him. His mother's screaming merged with the roaring blood in Oscar's ears. The magical tide drowned him, His skin began to burn.
Am I going Nova?
He had heard that selfers, unable to control their magic, sometimes succumbed to its power, burning themselves to a crisp. A gate half opened above him and vanished. He saw through the window as it reappeared on the lawn, grew, and disappeared.
Dad! Get off! You're hurting me! I'm trying to leave!
Fuck her!
Somewhere, the buzz that wasn't quite a scream droned on. The magic pulsed.
Dad! No!
Oscar lunged forward, throwing an elbow into what he hoped was his father's chest. The blow struck Stanley's nose. A gate opened wide behind him.
Dad, look out!
His fingers brushed the tips of Stanley's fingers as his father half-stepped, half-fell into the gate, tumbling onto the grass beyond and sliding to a halt. Oscar watched through the portal's static sheen as his father looked around, his eyes huge. Suddenly, they shot wide, and Stanley scrambled to his feet.
Oscar! Oscar!
Then the gate snapped shut, and his father was gone. Oscar stood staring at empty air.
Oscar! Where did he go? Where did Stanley go?
Britton wrestled to reopen the gate.
Come on! Open, damn you!
He pried with his fingers at the empty air. Somewhere beyond it, his father was trapped, possibly dying.
Open! Open the fuck back up!
Nothing. The tide churned within him, eddying uselessly. A gate opened beside his mother, but vanished before he could turn to face it.
Where is he?
I don't know, Mom.
You have to bring him back! Bring him back!
I can't.
What do you mean? Open it up and get him back!
I don't know how. I can't control it.
Oh!
Mom?
Desda blinked at the empty space where the gate had closed, her head shaking slowly, her mouth wide.
Mom!
You get away from me!
His father had vanished. Britton couldn't save him. The need to run overcame all else. He surrendered to it and let his legs carry him away from his mother's accusing eyes.
Latency presents a challenge to the American people and the world as unique and as dangerous as the atom bomb. It represents the greatest opportunity, but also the greatest threat we have faced as a nation since the first atomic weapon was tested in 1945. Like it or not, magic is the new nuke. Senator Nancy Whalen, Chairman, Senate Subcommittee on the Great Reawakening.
Oscar Britton's bloodied feet slid inside his father's shoes, pounding down the road toward the town where he'd grown up. If the army had taught him one thing, it was how to run. And he did it well, despite the screaming of his wounded calf. Somewhere behind him was a horrible thing, something he didn't want to think about. And if he could just keep running fast enough, maybe that thing would never catch up to him. The tides of magic went with him. Gates snapped open, teasing him with the prospect of saving his father, never staying open long enough to admit him. He threw himself into a ditch, watching over the rise as two police cruisers swept past, heading for his parents' house. He bolted back to the street, racing onward. And then he stopped, bathed in the glow of a convenience store sign. He knew this parking lot. His friend, Rob Dowsman, had introduced him to smoking dope here, hidden behind a bread truck and pretending the drug affected him more than it did. For Britton, it had been a one-time deal, but Rob had made it a lifestyle. That lifestyle had bound him to this spot, though he'd moved into the store and behind the counter. Britton could see him through the window, running a hand through his curly blonde hair as he laughed with a customer. Britton felt a wave of relief at that smile. With Rob, it had never mattered that Britton was black, or twice his size, or better in school. Britton realized why his footsteps had brought him here. If there was a person in the world who would not judge him, it was Rob. Fluorescent lighting reflected off rows of eye drops, canned soup, and shampoo. The customer, a middle-aged woman with short hair and a thick middle, was buying a pint of ice cream. Britton marveled at them. The world ticked on, blind to the tectonic shift in his life. Britton looked up at the TV screen hanging from a corner of the ceiling. The news blared a block-lettered footer. Riots in Montmartre district of Paris. Selfers battle European Caliphate police. The strict Sharia Islamic law of the EC forbid the practice of non-suppressive magic, but that didn't stop some from trying. The screen cut to shots of djinn-born selfers standing atop a burning armored police vehicle, Suppression Magique printed on the side. French police in riot gear and Islamic Mutawain religious police swarmed around it. The djinn-born were bared to the waist and covered in winding tattooed Arabic script. One spit fire over the police. The other froze a Mutawain officer with a touch, then kicked his crystalline form to splinters. When Britton took his eyes off the TV, both Rob and the customer were staring at him, wide-eyed.
Dude.
Britton lifted his hands, but she only pushed past him and ran out the sliding doors. The news had been replaced by a mugshot. Britton recognized the image from his military common access card. Action 6 News Alert, read the scrolling text. $100,000 reward offered for information leading to the capture of a selfer fugitive in your area. Oscar Britton escaped from military custody and is currently at large. If you see this individual, please contact the authorities immediately. This selfer's black magic is not controlled, and he should be considered extremely dangerous. Do not attempt to apprehend him on your own. A toll-free number followed. Britton looked back to Rob, who looked away, blushing.
It's been running all night.
Britton followed Rob's gaze over his shoulder. An open gate glittered just inside the store's entrance.
Dude, this is not good.
Rob, please.
You've got to call somebody. This is some serious shit right here. Man, I had no idea you were... I mean, holy crap.
Rob, it's me, man. It's Oscar.
I know, man. I know. It's not a big deal. I'm just saying. You have to call somebody.
Rob pointed a trembling finger at a black payphone below the TV. His hand darted under the counter. Britton thought he might produce the store's sawed-off, but Rob slapped two quarters on the counter.
There you go, man. Call's on me. Don't sweat it. I don't even want the reward.
Don't waste any more time. You're alone.
But Rob was right. Britton did have to make this call. Would they kill him? Probably. But maybe that's what needed to happen. His father was dead by his hand. He couldn't control what was clearly a dangerous weapon. Why was he prioritizing his own life over others? What gave him that right? That was why they called them selfers.
You're latent. You're a probe. You're not in control of your magic. The army has rejected you. You've killed your father. Your mother is terrified of you. Even Rob is scared of you. You're a fugitive. Your life has changed forever. And most importantly, you're alone.
Operator.
South Burlington Ang Base. SOC Liaison Office.
South Burlington Air National Guard? I have the main switchboard number here.
I need the Supernatural Operations Corps Liaison Office. There's been an incident. This is an emergency.
You should have called 911.
I didn't. I called you.
SOC, Captain Nearide.
This is Lieutenant Britton. 158th Op Support Flight.
Lieutenant Britton, we've been very worried about you. I'm glad you called.
Yes.
We know what's happened, Oscar. Are you all right?
I...
Oscar, all you have to do is stay where you are. It's going to be all right. Can you hear me? We're coming to get you and we're going to help you. All you have to do is not move and you'll be fine. Do you understand me?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. I'm trying to do the right thing.
I need you to calm down and stick by that phone, okay? Whatever you do, do not surrender yourself to the police. The police may not understand what you've done like we do. Should you see police vehicles, hide as best you can until we can get to you. Do you understand? Hello? Hello?
The kernel of self-preservation blossomed. His mind conjured images of Harlequin descending, lightning crackling from his fingertips. The probe girl on the roof lying helpless in a spreading pool of blood. Oscar Britton might have a dangerous, uncontrolled power, but the army murdered little girls.
What the hell are you doing? You damned idiot, run!
He dropped the receiver, letting it hang. He turned to see two police cars whip into the parking lot. Rob was gone. Four uniformed officers exited the vehicles, guns drawn, and raced for the door.
Magic? Fuck that. I got 5.56 millimeters of magic right here. Once I pull this trigger, no spell in the world is going to stop your brains from winding up all over that wall behind you. There's been a reawakening, all right. We woke up our warrior hearts. We remembered Guadalcanal. We remembered Fallujah. We remembered what it means to be a United States Marine. Lance Corporal Jimmy Gonzo Gonzalez, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, 13th Suppression Lance.
Britton dove over the counter. Beside the safe was a sawed-off shotgun. The breech was open, shells loaded into both barrels. All he had to do was snap it closed, stand, and fight. He couldn't run forever. Why had Captain Nairide warned him not to surrender to the police? So Harlequin could have the pleasure of killing him instead of hauling him before a court-martial to do the deed officially? He glanced over the counter. The police officers advanced at a crouch, two leveled pistols. The other two followed with shotguns ready. The magic rose. This time, he welcomed it.
Screw the gun. I don't need it.
He closed his eyes and let the tide flow. He could feel the current reaching out toward the cops. He stood, arms spread. The air behind the policeman reverberated. One of the cops raised his weapon. Britton didn't flinch, overwhelmed by the magic coursing through him. He felt like his veins would burst, his cells pried apart. He desperately tried to shunt the tide back, but it would not be denied. Another cop leveled a black shotgun through the glass display window.
Selfa, son of a bitch! Switch it off!
I'm trying, but now it's out and I can't stop it.
The magic found what it sought and hauled it through the gate. The portal spasmed and pushed something tall and strange into the world. The cops turned, Britton forgotten. The thing from the gate was at least 7 feet tall, covered with feathers so dark they absorbed light, each veined and edged in bright red, glowing bloody. A spade-shaped crest of the same color crowned its head. It took a tentative step on a leathery leg with dark purple skin. One claw hovered in the air. Its head flicked left and right, black eyes regarding the policeman, swinging a dark purple beak as long and sharp as any sword.
Christ!
The giant bird flicked its head again, the narrow throat ballooning to basketball size, tiny black feathers stretched so far apart that Britton could see purple skin taut beneath. Then it released its power. The cops were blown off their feet, ears bleeding. Showered with shattered glass, Britton ducked behind the counter. When he rose, the tide was already building again.